Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 141.
This week on the podcast, Brian Williams can't know what traumatic events did or did not occur to him or somebody else in either Iraq or some other country.
Greece isn't afraid to tell Germany what they really think about modern-day loans and, you know, World War II.
And the House can't remember why they're trying to repeal Obamacare for the 56th time, but they can remember why Texas is awesome. And that really almost makes the same point, right?
Political heavyweights like the 90s-era governor of New York and the former governor of Virginia toss their hats into the ring for 2016. Book deals for everybody.
Ben Carson, the only Tea Party-approved pediatric neurosurgeon, makes the accidental error of showing a basic understanding of science.
Representative-slash-male model Aaron Schock needs you to know that he's not a Downton Abbey fan, despite his office's peacock feather decor.
And New Yorkers have scientist approval to clean up the subway's pesky bubonic plague germs by licking subway poles.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right, do that.
Surprise lead
are.
Story.
Right, surprise lead story. Surprise Wednesday
surprise
podcast.
Surprise Wednesday podcast. It's been a week full of surprises, because we didn't realize we were going to come to you this late.
No.
Only Brent's bosses could have known that this would happen.
Yeah.
Because there's no one else who could have
and
known.
And clients,
just, yeah.
Everybody but me
right.
knew that we weren't going to record this podcast until tonight.
And yet none of them told us.
No, nobody told me. If they would have told me when I was sitting in the office all day on Sunday that this was going to happen, then we could have warned you.
Exactly. But since we didn't know either, and now nobody knows.
Yeah. But here we are.
Here we are.
Midweek podcast. What could really be more exciting?
No, this is going to be helping you get through your Wednesday like nothing
else. Yeah, exactly. And like you said, who would have ever thought
that
this was our lead story this week? But
here's
we're doing
what happened.
It.
There's no news. There's been no news for weeks.
No.
Nothing's going on.
We have hilarious things to tell you, so don't shut the podcast
This is going
to
be a great podcast. I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, it's
I
awesome.
Have been dealing. I've been updating the doc all week because we kept
right.
postponing the podcast.
I have been so busy, as we just hinted right. at, that some of this podcast
is a surprise to you.
Some of the stories in this podcast are also news to me, so it's right. going to be really exciting for everybody.
It's
so
a podcast.
Walk me through the news.
I'm going to be reporting the news to all of you, Brent included.
Hopefully, better than some people who
we'll
are
talk about in a moment.
News. Yeah,
anyway. That we hinted at in the rundown, but are not leading with, because why would we?
No.
What we're leading with is my least favorite kind of news, which is a jobs report.
This is so good. I love it.
I hate the jobs report.
Because you know how much I don't love the jobs report, but you know that
you
I am,
love to report
I am
jobs
always
report,
the one though. Who's like, ooh, it's jobs report week. Like the first part of the month, I always know that we're going to get last month's job reports. And it excites me for some reason, because it just seems like an exciting thing that we can all be
taken by surprise every time the jobs report comes back, and disappointed every time that I have to deal with it.
I know.
So it's especially disappointing to me that we're leading with the jobs report this week, and yet I'm the one that made that choice.
I know.
I just really didn't want to lead with Brian Williams.
No, I
That's
know.
That's so not real news, and we're going to get to it right after this.
I know.
But the first thing that I wanted to tell you is that apparently, according to the fake numbers that comprise the jobs report,
right.
things are going great.
Right. And we had, like, things are going great, but speaking of fake numbers, we had some of the biggest fakery going on at all. Because this is why Lila hates talking about these, is because they really are they really are fake. And
if,
I know that
legitimate economic facts of some sort,
right.
then I would be all into it.
We like to talk about how they're fake, and I think you as listeners probably think that we are just being overdramatic, but literally in the last month, they were off by I don't do math. 70, they were off by 70,000. They were off by like a fourth of
there
the number.
There are months
basically,
where we don't even
time.
Get that many jobs reported.
I know.
Like, so apparently, according to this month's report, last month we added 257,000 jobs.
Right.
That was a big increase, and also it was notable because there were wage increases
right,
that went along with
has
it.
Not been happening.
And we have been, as many jobs as have been getting reported month after month, and we've been doing pretty well on
right.
the jobs front.
Doesn't matter if people can't eat.
No, exactly. If you have to work all of the jobs to make ends meet, then it doesn't matter if there's more of them, because you're still not making ends meet. Like, that doesn't
right.
help anybody.
Doesn't matter.
So, there was a minor wage increase. I think we saw wages tick up 12 cents an hour in January, which
That's
is...
good.
Good for that kind of number. It's
sure.
depressing when you actually have to talk about it in real numbers.
No.
Like, oh, yeah. 12 cents an hour. Really showing them.
Yeah.
And the unemployment rate ticked up, but it was one of those ones where it seems like people are optimistic and they're rejoining the labor force.
Right.
So it ticked up from 5.6 to 5.7%. That's
yeah.
a sign. I think ultimately people are optimistic about what that means.
Yeah.
Even though it theoretically sounds like a bad thing. Also, November and December's numbers, as we said, not at all what we told you they were before.
Right. November, they have now revised to be 423,000, and it was 353,000 when they first announced
it. Like, that's not even... Don't not even close. Bother reporting those numbers. Just say there were more than there were... Like, there were more jobs created than not.
Don't tell us.
Tell us something vague and positive.
Yeah.
But this is at least... This is the first time that we're seeing, like, significant wage growth. At least, you know, this is at least wage growth that has... beat inflation,
right.
Which for years we have not been seeing. So wages have been stagnant while inflation has gone up, or inflation has continued to rise, as it always does. And so we've been spending years with real wages decreasing.
Right. Well, this is the first jobs report that, you know, since we've been talking about this every month, it seems like, since for the last however long we've been doing this podcast, 2.5 years, right. It seems like there's always something, whatever it is, that is not great in the jobs report.
Right.
It's either that we didn't get wages going up or that more people are dropping out of the, you know, this report seemed to have...
Only good news.
Only had the good news. It's really the first time in a long time because, like we said, it had the wages, it had a good number, it had people re-entering the force. I mean, it was good.
Yeah.
Just on the whole.
And that's also... It also, I think, possibly... consumer prices are having low inflation at the moment because gas has gone down so
right.
much. My dad vaguely promised me that gas would never go back up to the kinds of prices it used to be like years ago when I moved to LA and was like, why is gas so expensive? I had no idea. Because of something having to do with the Saudis no longer price fixing gas or something. I wasn't 100% listening to what he was
that.
Saying.
Yeah.
But in any case, apparently we're all just expecting gas prices to stay low now.
Yeah. Well, great.
Which is, I guess, good news.
That's why idiots are buying SUVs all over the country.
Right? We're back to that business.
God,
there was also a controversy earlier this week where Obama tried to make a historical reference that everyone immediately blew out about because you can't talk about history with these people.
No.
These people being Americans. So,
right.
So he was...
Mostly Republican Americans.
First of all, he was at the National Prayer Breakfast, which I'm against anyone going to ever, even though I know the president's supposed to go to that.
Well, but the thing
is...
The
National Prayer Breakfast is filled with crazy people.
Well, it is. And the president always does go to this. And actually, on Meet the Press this morning, there was some discussion as to whether this was sort of specifically said, knowing that it would get the response that it did at the prayer breakfast, because he doesn't actually personally himself like to go to the prayer breakfast either.
And also, I think this was a point that he added into the speech himself. He basically ad-libbed this point.
I
think he was sort of like, fuck it. Say whatever the fuck I want.
Yeah.
And what he wanted to say was that he wanted, you know, he was talking about terrorism in the Middle East, and he was talking about some of the extreme acts of violence that we're seeing, you know, as acts of terrorism there. And he noted that people, quote, also committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ. And reference the Crusades.
Yes.
Which is a time that people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ.
That's right.
One of the many times, by the way. I mean, all kinds of gods are having terrible deeds committed in their name.
Yeah.
But in any case, as you can imagine, evangelical Christians and a lot of crazy pants just really lost their shit. Yeah. They can't be bothered with that.
No.
First of all, immediately everyone was like, yeah, but you don't... He didn't talk about the Muslim violence that preceded the Crusades as if, like... Like, we needed to, you know, go back until...
Wasn't
all
the point.
Not the point.
Yeah.
His point was that religion can be distorted into and become
correct.
Violent in any context.
Right.
Even the religion that we practice, that I myself as president practice, has been perverted to this.
Right.
Like, that's what he was saying, guys.
Yeah.
But it kind of, it suddenly, a bunch of Twitter historians got all up in his grill.
Mm-hmm.
And it is still, I mean, I think I read today that the White House is still sort of shocked by how many legs this story actually ended
I'm
up
sure.
having. I think they just thought it would be like a funny, not a funny controversy, but like a little
controversy
that would get everyone, you know, to talk about history or whatever. and instead, it ignited like a crazy punditry firestorm.
Right. Well, and I think what his point was, and I think that, yes, this is historically accurate, and people should not have freaked out about this as much as they did, but I think this... You know, now that you tell me that it was off the cuff, it is not surprising to me, because I think he could have made the same point wordsmithed a little more that would not have caused... That
this
would have
uproar.
Been the exact same thing, but would not have caused the
you
uproar.
You know what, though? I don't think that these kinds of comments necessarily lose him any points with his base.
No,
anyway,
I don't think so,
like,
so either.
And he's gone rogue.
No.
Not he's gone quip rogue. He hasn't gone president rogue. He'll never really go president rogue. He's very buttoned up. But he has gone quip rogue. This is like his State of the Union and I won them both comment.
Yeah.
He's just He's not sorry. He's a lame duck president. He's going to make a comment about the Crusades if he wants to.
That's right.
And his base is going to love it, and other people are going to flip out, and he doesn't care.
No.
He's just got this dumb conservative Congress to deal with. They're not going to do anything.
People aren't voting for him.
But yeah. So he can say whatever he wants about the Crusades.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And he did.
And he did.
Damn it.
And this is the part where we talk about Brian Williams.
Yeah. He's on leave.
He's on leave.
As of today.
Yeah. He, he's been suspended without pay.
Right. Suspended without pay. He was on leave.
He was taking leave, and then they were like, though you're already on leave,
you're now suspended. Right. He put himself on leave, I think, right?
Well, because he's a producer on that show.
Well, and I think he was sort of like, I'm the story now, so, like, I shouldn't be, you know, like, so he took himself out.
Well, he took himself out, and then NBC, like, suspended his pay for 6 months.
Right.
So, in any case, what we're trying to tell you is that Brian Williams is no longer at the NBC Nightly News.
Right.
And will not be for at least 6 months.
Right.
Here's why. Because of a hilarious series of potentially made up
Well, and I was having this debate with somebody the other night because I was like, I personally think that he has to be out, and we can get into why I think that sort of, you know, as this conversation goes. But we were looking to see how this sort of unfolded. And interestingly, as you know, he's sort of like, it's a tall tale that he has created in his own brain about when he was in Iraq reporting on the Iraq war, that his helicopter got shot down. And as we know, it wasn't his helicopter that got shot down. It was somebody else's helicopter, the one
No, that's not even what happened. It was a helicopter that got shot down on the day he was there.
It was like hours before,
He was not involved in any way in a helicopter getting shot down.
Right.
It started with him telling a story about how it starts with in 2003.
Yeah.
He takes his trip to Iraq.
Yes.
Right after he takes the trip, he says that he learned that some helicopter ahead of him got blown out of the sky.
He reported it accurately initially.
He reported it accurately at the time.
Yes.
Then in 2007, he says that's the helicopter right in front of his helicopter and that he witnessed this event.
Yeah.
By 2013, it was his helicopter.
He was on the David Letterman show and he was talking about how he'd been shot down. You want to know what's really funny? You want to know what this reminds me of?
What?
Granted, she doesn't report the news, so it's a different story. Right. But remember when Hillary Clinton was under fire from when she was, like, in Bosnia or Kosovo or wherever she was, like, on the tarmac with her plane or whatever?
And then
like,
it turned out
then there's photos of her just sort of, like, strolling with her aviators on, sort of, like, down the road. It was like, everybody sort of, like, likes to...
He was in a war zone.
Right.
But he wants to have an exciting story about his war zone experience.
Yeah, well, I would say, A, don't make it up, or B, just... I mean, go to the war. I mean, if that's your ultimate end game, is to have a war story, then be in the war.
Here's my theory about what happened. When you go on Letterman, they call you and they're like, do you have any exciting stories about yourself?
Yeah.
And you have to, like, think in terms, like, your life becomes, if you're a celebrity, I feel like, partially about thinking of funny anecdotes to tell about yourself. Because you can tell that everyone who's a celebrity is really practiced in telling a few quippy anecdotes about themselves.
Because
they tell the same ones on every talk show.
Yeah.
So I feel like he was like, oh, you know who would make a good anecdote? Is if I told them that story about Iraq.
Yeah.
And then just slowly, it just morphed into a story where he was shot down.
It's like the big fish story, you know, that just keeps getting bigger every time you tell it.
Yeah.
It's been getting bigger since 2003.
It's a tall tale that got taller and taller.
Yeah.
In any case, Stars and Stripes, the military magazine, or a newspaper, was not thrilled with his incorrect reporting of his own situation.
Because as... it may not surprise you to learn, there were other people in this helicopter with him. It was not
witnesses.
He was not manning this helicopter solo by himself.
Solo helicopter trip.
No. So there were people there.
Stars and Stripes spoke to some of the soldiers who were there, and they were like, that's not really what happened. There was a helicopter that got shot down that day, but it involved no NBC personnel whatsoever.
No.
So that was an unfortunate reality that he had to face. And then there was this one guy who was piloting that helicopter who for a while was backing up Brian Williams' story. And then was sort of like, I don't know, I'm questioning my memories. That's what he said, quote unquote, questioning his memories because he was making up his memories just like Brian Williams was.
Well, he wanted a war story too, probably.
Yeah, no, everybody wants a war story. You don't go to a war zone to report on it and not want a war story out of that.
Yeah.
You don't want to actually experience the war story, but you want to tell it later, obviously.
Right, well, that's what he did.
And that's what he did. In any case, he's on leave for 6 months while he thinks about what he did.
Yeah.
And maybe his memory will improve by the time he gets back.
What are your thoughts on this? I'm curious.
I mean, I could care less than less about Brian Williams in a sort of general sense.
Sure.
I've never really watched the NBC Nightly News. And so nobody's trying to.
Anyway.
No, nobody. He's not like a sort of classic anchor where I feel like I trust him. So when I found out that he had lied about this, I was like, well, he's a pretty person that reports the news. That's not shocking to me that he wasn't fully aware of what the news was. That said, I do feel like it would be nice if we lived in an era where news anchors could be trusted to factually report their own experiences while they're on press trips to war-torn regions.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah. I don't feel like as a
pretty unequivocally, at least in terms of me. And granted, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I am a real journalist here on this podcast, but I did, that is what I studied.
I studied journalism.
Yeah. And this to me is just like a real no-brainer. I mean, whoever is sitting in that chair can't be doing this.
No.
As far as I'm concerned.
I sort of like on a personal level understand why it would be exciting for him to have this war story and why he would want to create this war story.
Yeah.
I also feel like he's maybe in one of the few jobs where you absolutely can't make up a war story for yourself.
Right.
And I also feel like it has only recently, like the idea of him as like a real journalist has only really recently occurred to me in the context of this story, because I don't think of any of these news anchors anymore as like real journalists unless they're on a news, you know, like.
Yeah, you think of them as a news
60
reader.
Minutes, I think of them as sort of like people who maybe like understand the news, like those kind of news magazine shows.
Sure.
I feel like they maybe kind of like understand the news. I feel like maybe like, you know, the PBS news anchors like probably understand the news. That was a crazy
noise.
Don't
know what that noise was.
But the NBC News people, it just like doesn't even like enter my mind that they would be like considered real news anchors. And we live in a world with so much like puffed up punditry anyway that it like the idea of him as like an impartial news reader.
Yeah.
Just doesn't even like it just occurred to me.
Yeah.
So I've only had seconds to think of my thoughts on this. Is what I'm saying. And I took minutes to tell you them.
Fair enough. That's okay.
Yeah, that's life.
Yeah.
But in any case, we don't have to worry about it anymore because we won't have to watch the NBC Nightly News because it'll be run by a stranger.
Right.
Meanwhile, things are getting real exciting in Greece.
This is like your new jam, Greece.
Greece is my new jam for sure.
Well, you live there.
I studied abroad in Greece when I was in college. And every member of my family has also done that. We're not Greek. I don't know why we all went there. Whatever. It's fine. It's nice there. And so I already felt a kinship towards Greece because they have radical leftists there, and I love that about them.
Right. And once they're winning elections, then it gets real.
Exactly. Because when I was there, everyone was sort of pissed off because in the last few years, they had switched to the Euro. It was right after the Olympics.
Post-Olympics.
So it was very clean, and things were running well for the first time probably ever, but no one could afford to do anything. It was like, the Euro made everything so expensive there that people were pissed off.
Well, and this is when everything started to go to shit.
Right. So I'm not surprised to find that years later, everyone is living on the brink of ruin because they can't afford to do so much as eat, even though they're working, or that the unemployment rate is like 1,000,000%.
Right.
In any case, enter Alexis Spiras, who is the new prime minister.
That is a solid name, by the way, people.
Greek people, first of all, are not kidding about their names. Second of all,
at least that one's an easy one to say.
Yeah, at least
sometimes
it's not
they're
like
getting involved in a lot.
Spiridopoulos, it's whatever,
it's
you
too
know,
much.
It's too many letters. In any case, he delivered a speech on Saturday where he laid out his plans to dismantle the austerity program that he, you know, campaigned on getting rid of.
Yeah.
And he was great. He ruled out extending the bailout, the European bailout of Greece beyond, it's supposed to end on February 28th. They had plans to sort of like keep extending it so they could like keep lending them money so they could keep being in debt, basically.
Yeah.
And he was like, screw you guys, after February 28th, it's over.
It's over.
Curtains. This government is not going to make an extension. And he said, quote, because it cannot ask for an extension of mistakes. He also said that he thinks they can strike like a bridge deal with Europe to kind of keep things afloat there that isn't as harmful to Greece as these bailout, you know, as these bailout funds have been, and proposed allowing them to issue some more short-term debt so that they can fund the government that way, or to call in some of the Greek bonds that are held by the European Central Bank so that they can get some funds moving into the country that way. But he basically said he's reinstating pension bonuses, he's canceling the property taxes that were imposed by the European lenders and the IMF, he's ending the mass layoffs that have been ruining everything for everyone. He's raising the minimum wage back to pre-crisis levels because they lowered the minimum wage. And because basically the Greek government
austerity measures that
has
they were
been
under.
Expected I mean, to provide these like huge surpluses that they then just pay over to Europe.
Yeah.
And there's no way to like fix your economy when all of this, when you're having to basically like rape the nation in order to pay back these loans that were supposed to fix everything.
Yeah.
So in any case, obviously Europeans are panicking because Greece is not famous for its math savviness. There was not a government that was like a picture of responsible spending before.
Sure.
But Spiros also said that he's aware of those issues and he is making changes to sort of like cut off some of those problems.
Right.
He's going to get rid of some of the like benefits for government ministers that are kind of like bloated benefits like cars and aircraft and things like that.
Right.
He's cracking down on tax evasion by the rich. And he said that public sector contracts are no longer going to favor oligarchs, which is going to be really popular with his base because Greek people live in like the most corrupt society known to man. And so the sort of Greek left is going to be excited that they're
super into that,
that they're finally, you know, kind of cutting the really rich out of their privileged, you know, throne. But he basically said Greece is we're going to work to achieve balanced budgets, but we're not going to try to produce these unrealistic surpluses that, you know, these were done in service of these debt repayments that are not fair and are not responsible.
Yeah.
And that they would try to renegotiate the payments so that they can sort of pay back what they owe in a responsible manner, but they're not going to be fucked with anymore. You know, they were sort of like, if we just need to pay off the interest or if we need to renegotiate this so that it can be done on a schedule that makes sense for us, then that's what we're going to do.
Sure.
So fuck it. And then as a sort of final twist of the knife,
as if all of these things were not genius enough.
Well, because here's the deal. The country that really holds the most Greek debt is Germany. Germany is a sort of interesting case because Germany is kind of like one of the reasons that many of the countries of Europe are in this financial situation they're in began with Germany in the World War II, World War I.
Also, now in the state that we are in, they also are sort of, at least sort of recent history, have been sort of like the most financially stable.
Exactly.
Too.
They're the most financially stable, and they're the economic powerhouse of Europe.
So they are the ones who sort of like have the most vested interest in a lot of they're really the ones who are sort of like imposing the austerity to get this money back.
Because it's
mostly their money.
They are known to be the ones that are imposing these austerity measures. It's like a sort of known thing that Germany is behind all of this.
Right.
And so basically, in this sort of like vaguely symbolic move, he said he finished his speech with a pledge to seek World War II reparations from Germany.
Which was like a great
put them in their place. Like, you may believe that you're the financial saviors of all of Europe, but let's talk about history for a moment.
Right. A lot of people
talk about this.
A lot of people talk about this. Some people laying down some history lessons this
That's
week.
Right. That's
world leaders knowing their history.
Well, I find the thing, like, the idea of the German government imposing austerity measures on some of these, like, famously inept European governments, like, this is the same, you know, in Spain and in Italy. They've had famously inept governments for years. They're kind of, like, casual about their finances, and that's led to, you know, that's always kind of made them be on the brink of disaster, and that's kind of how they operate, and that, you know, in most of the Mediterranean, everyone's sort of, like, on the brink of disaster, and that's kind of their deal. But, like, and Germany comes in as this, like, sort of, like, straight-laced, fiscally responsive influence, and is like, listen, children. It's like, fuck you, Germany.
Yeah, come on.
Like, Germany shouldn't be trusted to be the listen children voice. They don't have that kind of moral authority, guys.
They do not. No.
In any case, moving on to Obamacare.
We had a lot
Lots
of Obamacare
to
this
talk
news.
About with Obamacare. This,
this I think
week.
Is maybe one of my favorite stories this week.
Oh my God.
Because it's just too insane and ridiculous and hilarious. It's so good. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk, and we have talked about it a lot. You know, the Republicans often claim that they want to, you know, get rid of Obamacare, but everybody is sort of like, well, what are you going to replace it with? Because there's like, what, it's 11 million people are on this now, or however many millions of people are on this. So they had some sort of like vague plan last year, like in 2014, that was like, you know, that they released that sort of like didn't go anywhere because it was like, well, this is
not
going to happen anyway.
It was
wasn't
a vague
a real
proposal
plan.
To make
like
a plan.
It was like just like a proposal. Anyway, so this year they've got their brand new proposal that they're out with last week, and it's just going to blow everyone's minds, except some people in the Democratic Party recognized it as something they had seen before.
Yes. And specifically, the press secretary for the Ways and Means Committee, the Democratic secretary for the Ways and Means Committee, identified a few identical passages.
Right. And by a few, we mean they literally released the exact same press statement about their plan from last year as their new plan for this year.
Here's where it was different. Because let's not lie, there was one difference.
Yeah.
Instead of Tom Coburn, who's no longer a senator for the United States,
he slapped a different co-sponsor's name on it.
Yeah, they had a representative from Michigan, Fred Upton, co-sponsor it. So
it's so good.
So, you know, it's all new now.
It's all new.
Different. Literally, like, the bullet points in it were identical.
Yeah, the quotes from people
the quotes
about
from her. The politicians were identical.
Yeah.
The only one they removed was Obamacare is a disaster. Because you know what? It's not. They can't say that.
Couldn't say that anymore.
But also, the interesting thing about this is it's not actually drafted in legislative language, so it can't be...
No, they can't vote on
the CBO can't look into it and, like, figure out how much it would cost and whether it's feasible.
It's not an actual plan.
It's a fake plan. And the actual plan in it is to come up with a committee that will create a plan. That's the plan.
Right.
The plan calls for the creation of a committee to create a plan. And we know from our experience with the shutdown that that works really well in this Congress.
Yeah.
So thank God for that. So maybe this explains why the House then tried to vote for the 56th time this week on repealing Obamacare.
Well, they had a new House, so they wanted everybody to get to vote
to get a chance to vote again.
And there's new senators, so they want to send it to the Senate so those senators can vote on it again.
Yeah.
Even though they know that it's... It's just a dumb, dead-in-the-water bill
that's a waste of their time. So basically, the hearing was like comically ineptly handled because everyone has really lost interest.
Nobody cares going to these hearings.
This is their 56th hearing on this. Like, who has time?
Right. They keep voting on it, but like, there's less interest every time. Like, there was literally nobody there.
I mean, they couldn't find enough people to speak at the hearing.
No, exactly.
There was a Democrat who was sort of overseeing it, Jim McGovern, who basically just like was like cracking jokes and having like hilarious comebacks the whole time because on the Republican side they just kept running out of speakers.
Right.
And they'd be like, "Does anyone else want to speak?" And they'd be like, "Hold on a moment, we gotta find." And then they would have to like go find somebody.
And then like, finally, the last person I think was like, "I defer my time or whatever." Like, I mean, just basically they had to give up at a certain point because it was like.
But before they gave up, they also had some hilarious speeches. Like Pete Sessions delivered a speech that was just like a speech about how great Texas is.
That's right.
He didn't even, his Texans are a proud people, and we've been a proud people since the days of the Alamo and San Jacinto. Like, if Texas were its own country, it'd have the 13th highest GDP in the world. And McGovern replied, "Wonderful commercial for Texas. We should all visit." Then Rosa DeLauro, who's a Democrat from Connecticut, told them to give, she said, "Give it a rest, get a life," to them while she was speaking.
Yeah. I think Nancy Pelosi had a pretty good quote.
Oh, yeah, I didn't pull her quote, but Nancy Pelosi also had a good comeback.
It was like, come on, people. I mean, you know.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Well, anyway. And so basically, like, as we said, the proposal for what they're going to do is just to call for some committees to be created to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
So there's not even a real proposal. And it's already been, like, a really weird start to the session because the House abandoned immigration. Because they were having issues within the party trying to agree on what they thought about that.
Yeah.
They barely passed Keystone. Like, they struggled to pass Keystone. They don't have enough for to override a veto. And they were going to, like, challenge the executive order. By the way.
Our sound studio
has been invaded by honking cars and dogs. Like,
God damn it.
Come on.
People.
In any case, they were going to try to go after Obama's executive actions on immigration and couldn't get their shit together to do that.
Yeah.
So instead, they just went to an old standby and tried to repeal Obamacare. And McGovern finally said, 56, let's see, that's 216. It's 4.5 dozen. But no matter how you add it up, it has to be some sort of world record in political futility.
It really does.
Which it basically does.
Yeah.
And also, there's a court case going on regarding Obamacare
that is
falling apart in a hilarious manner.
Right. And this is, you know, this is 101, too, because I don't know much about arguing something in front of the Supreme Court. Don't know anything about it. But I remember, I don't know if you ever watched it, but like when they did the that documentary, The Case Against Eight,
mm-hmm.
where HBO sort of like talked about like how they built that case to go to the Supreme Court, basically. And the first thing that they had to do when you're arguing something like this, you have to have somebody who is really the face of this.
They had to find the plaintiffs.
Right. They had to find the right plaintiffs. They had to find the right couples who sort of like were going to be good and stay together and speak eloquently on this. And so for this Supreme Court case here,
even if you're going to a legislative hearing, you have to do this kind of vetting work. We've had to do this kind of vetting work to talk about 9/11 health issues in front of the Senate.
The Republicans aren't very good at this. This is how they ended up with Sarah Palin.
Exactly.
Okay.
They're not great vetters. They're not into the research.
Yeah.
They don't care.
So this case is falling apart for the reason that they have four plaintiffs. And
literally every one of them has an issue.
Big ones.
Big issues. So their argument has to do with the tax credits that you get in order to make Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act affordable to you.
Right.
And so they're trying to come up with like weird technicalities that they found in the law that, like, talk about how those aren't legal, and then the whole thing falls apart.
Well, there's some things where, like, you don't get the...
You don't get certain credits if you are on the federal exchange instead of a state exchange.
Exactly. It's a technicality.
It's a technicality.
We're not going to get into it. Don't understand it.
It's super boring.
But, I mean,
it's boring.
It's sort of irrelevant to what we're about to tell.
Well, it's also a stupid argument that is not in the spirit of the law.
Right, exactly.
In any case, and it's being brought by this libertarian think tank, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which sounds fake and obviously is fake because they could not even a little bit vet the people that they were going to make the face of this case.
Yeah.
So we begin with Rose Luck, who's one of the plaintiffs.
Mm-hmm.
Her problem came up recently when it was discovered that the address that she was using to calculate her, you know, costs for the Affordable Care Act.
Right, because it's by your zip code, basically.
It's by your zip code.
You figure out what your subsidies are.
Because these are all Virginia residents, I think, who are arguing this based on how the Virginia, you know, Virginia doesn't have its own exchange.
It does not,
you know, whatever.
It's run by the federal exchange.
But so the address that she's using to qualify herself, you know, for this program or for the Affordable Care Act is a motel. And first of all,
Not even a long-term stay, it's a short-term. You can only stay there for four weeks.
No, she doesn't live there, and said that you're not allowed to stay for more than 28 days anyway.
Yeah.
So she describes herself, she's a 55-year-old resident of Petersburg, Virginia, or was in 2013 when the litigation began. But the motel is an American Inn motel on right off Interstate 95, and nobody knows what her real address is, or if she has one.
Yeah.
But so, in any case, that might disqualify her, because the whole situation that they're basing this case on has to do with, you know, has to do with her qualifying under this address.
Right.
So, there's that. Then, there's these two veterans who might qualify for care from the VA. So, like, they might not even matter to this case.
Right.
Because
so
that's the two guys. That's three of the four. And then finally, we have Brenda Levy.
Poor Brenda.
She's the fourth plaintiff, and she's the only one with a sort of solid case.
Right.
So they really need her to, like, not fuck this up.
Yeah.
But she's a 64-year-old woman. She's a substitute teacher. She is about to become eligible for Medicare.
Right. So that's sort of where her...
constraints.
Right. I mean, that's how her case could potentially fall apart.
Exactly.
I mean, right now she is having to get it. So, I mean, she does have a case, but you're right.
It might fall apart that way, or it might fall apart in one of the many other ways that had to do with the fact that she claims that her income was something like, you know, $43,000 in 2014. But then the public school system that she lists as her employer says that she made less than $10,000, in which point she wouldn't apply, you know, she wouldn't qualify for these tax credits if she made less than $10,000 a year.
Right,
she wouldn't be paying any taxes. You can't get credits on taxes you're not paying.
Yeah.
So her sort of qualification is still sort of in question.
And I would assume she would be qualifying
her money
from, well, and she'd be qualifying
for Medicare
there.
At that point.
Right, $10,000, thank God. Yeah.
She's terrible. She's a conservative. She gives money to terrible organizations and organized a protest against openly gay members of the Boy Scouts. So she's up to that kind of nonsense.
Yeah.
But she also has shockingly little information about the case that she's involved in.
She doesn't know anything about it.
Mother Jones went to go speak to her because Mother Jones was doing like a sort of meet the plaintiffs article and found that she knows next to nothing about what's going on. She's never met the lawyers that are involved. She's never met the other plaintiffs. She's thinking that going to the Supreme Court might be a fun field trip for her. Like, has no idea what's happening. And then also expressed a huge amount of shock that were the law to be repealed, that there's no plan to replace it with, that tons of people would lose their health insurance. She was like, I don't want to cause everyone to lose their health insurance.
She was horrified that this might kick everybody off of Obamacare.
Yeah.
I mean.
And then she said that she thinks that Terry McAuliffe, who's the governor of Virginia, wants to expand Medicaid, not realizing that she was talking about the Medicaid expansion that would happen under the Affordable Care Act. So, like, she has no information about what's going on.
None.
She's their only solid candidate. And I say solid with a grain of salt because she's not even that solid because no one can figure out why any of the numbers she's given them make sense or add up.
So good.
So their case is just like
it's falling apart at the
seams. Right to pieces.
So good. I love it.
Yeah. Every challenge to Obamacare that has come up so far in 2015 has been patently absurd.
It's a joke.
It's like an actual joke.
Yeah.
More jokes.
Oh, this is an interesting one.
This Netanyahu visit situation keeps sort of, it's like a slow burn story.
Yes.
We told you weeks ago that Boehner had unilaterally invited Netanyahu to come speak to Congress.
Really pissed off the White House.
Pissed off the White House because normally if you're inviting a foreign leader to come speak to the government, you check with the White House as a courtesy because that's a nice thing
to do. That's the thing you would do.
That's the thing you do. So in any case, because of that, there's like a huge number of Democrats that are planning to miss the speech because they think it's put them in sort of an awkward political yeah. situation, which it has. They're mad, you know, for one, because Boehner has done this without White House approval, and that kind right. of bucks the tradition that
right.
the very little, you know, courtesy that they have left, or sense of decorum that they have left on the hills
yep.
being destroyed by this. But also, it's poorly timed because Netanyahu's about to face an election in right. Israel, and they have a policy of not inviting leaders around the times of their own election, so it doesn't look like we're endorsing anybody, right. which is, I think, fair. And then also, we're going to be in talks with Iran at the same time that this is happening, and it's definitely right. going to have, like, a bad effect on... because. Netanyahu is going to call for tougher sanctions
right,
on
that's
Iran.
That's why he's coming. That's why the Republicans invited him in the
right,
first
that's
place.
His whole plan that's why he's here. In coming. And the Obama administration doesn't want to impose new sanctions until they're done with these negotiations and yeah. has been making better progress with Iran than anyone else has been making. I mean, or at least, you know, in our history, any other American yeah. administration has made. So, like, they're not trying to have everything screwed up by Netanyahu visiting, which is why they didn't really want him to come at this point
right.
anyway. Yeah. So, in any case... because of that, every day a new person announces that they're not going to go.
Yeah.
Today, it was Patrick Leahy.
Right.
So, good for him.
And I believe Bernie Sanders, too. And, I don't know if he's on the list.
He's
but
not
he was
on the list.
He was a recent one today,
yes,
I saw.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Vermont people, they're not having it.
No,
they're over
they're
it.
They're not, yeah.
But James Clyburn, who's the third-ranking House Democrat, he's not going to go. Raul Grijalva from Arizona,
yep.
he's the head of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. He's not going to go. John Lewis, the Georgian civil rights hero. G.K. Butterfield, who's the head of the Congressional Black Caucus, is not going to go.
Yep.
And then there's a couple of other representatives, Earl Blumenauer, Barbara Lee, Greg Meeks. And Biden's not going to make it because he's not going to be in town.
Right.
But basically, like, every day a new person announces they're not going to go. It's like this slow leak of people that yeah. are realizing it. Really, it puts them in an untenable situation because
right.
it makes it look... they have to basically, like... give the finger to the president to go do this. And
yeah.
this was by design. I mean, yeah. the whole thing is designed to be that way. So.
Yeah. It's interesting politically, though, what this means for all of these people, though.
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, to skip a speech, you know, from the leader of...
Israel.
Of Israel. Is
our
sort
BFFF.
Of, it's a bold move.
It's a bold move. No, I think that, you know, there's been sort of, like, some kind of, like... there's been some change in the way that individual leaders are approaching politics with Israel. It used to be that you just blanket couldn't say anything bad about Israel and
right.
couldn't oppose anything that they ever did.
Yeah.
But given how things in the Middle East have progressed and how
right.
there
at
have
least
been
most recently, you know,
at
what
least
was going on with
within Israel and Gaza and the way that they've been treating Gaza, and then also given how dangerous things have become outside of Israel with ISIS, and then the fact that we're trying to not, you know, allow Iran to have nuclear weapons,
right.
like, we're trying to work with Iran so that we don't end up in a terrible situation with them. Like, there's been some sort of, like, evolution
yeah.
in people's view of this sort of, like, Israel right or wrong, you know, friendship that we
yeah.
thought we had, because they've done things that really haven't been in our interest there.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm sort of excited to see that there's a more nuanced situation evolving.
I agree.
Because I think that our sort of understanding of the Middle East will be greatly improved by a willingness to sort of see both sides
Agreed.
Of what's going on in the Middle East.
Yeah.
In any case, other exciting news. Here's exciting 2016 news.
Yes.
There's a lot of it.
Yeah.
This is our favorite kind of news.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
First of all, the Working Families Party in New York.
Which I know well. That's your...
Had a vote to urge Elizabeth Warren to run for president. So they join MoveOn.org and Democracy for America and
yeah.
a bunch of other lefty groups in trying to force Elizabeth Warren to run for president,
yeah.
thereby ruining her life and saving America.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're trying to do.
Which is what we're trying to do. It's what we're all trying to do. Her office was like, she's not running for president. And I was like, go screw yourselves.
We don't care
if she wants to run for president.
It's not what we're interested in.
We're not interested in her acquiescence. She has to do it to save America. Like, this is her civic duty at this point.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't always want to do your civic duty. It's
right.
annoying to get up early to vote. I get it.
Right.
But, like, sometimes you just have to be president.
Yeah.
You have to run for president.
Elizabeth
Sorry.
Warren, if you don't run for president, then you obviously hate America.
You hate America. There's nothing else.
The terrorists have won.
Yeah, exactly.
You aren't running for president.
Yeah. And
is that what you want?
Exactly.
Is that how you're going to sleep every night?
I think we've been pretty clear about what's going on here, Elizabeth Warren. In any case... the Working Families Party needed to gain some credibility, I think, with the left, because everyone was really pissed off at them after the New York governor's race. They were not the advocates for Zephyr Teachout that they could have been, and they're sort of like They're basically what they are is a progressive party that runs the Democratic ticket, but you vote for them and then people know that it was Democratic or progressive voters that voted for the ticket instead of, you know, just regular Democrats. And so they, I think, were trying to kind of play both sides against the middle because they wanted to get the votes for Cuomo.
Right.
But because of that, they missed this great moment to support like an actual progressive who really had a great
showing. Yeah, right.
So in any case, that they, I think, needed the credibility. So well, it's good that they're doing some of it,
yeah.
Doing some credible things now. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what this means. It's just nothing. But
yeah.
it's nice to see that they're trying to be more credible right. this day and
of
age.
Of course, they had to, you know, tiptoe around the fact that they're not, you know, it's not a rejection of Mrs. Clinton.
Oh, God, I know.
You know, that's not what we mean to do here.
Right, because immediately everyone was like, you hate Clinton. That's not fair. And then they had right. to be like, okay, guys.
Right. They had to publicly say that they didn't while right. secretly.
By secretly, hopefully, hating her because she's not a progressive.
Right.
And their whole purpose is to support progressive candidates.
If you're a progressive group, I don't understand why you have to walk around
no.
acting like you like her.
I've felt this a lot because the local Democrats club where my parents are, like, went all out trying to, you know, endorse Hillary Clinton. And I was like, I get that she's a woman and it would be great to have a woman president. Like, I get why that would be great. I've been
sure.
talking about nothing but feminism and women being held back in the workplace for weeks.
It's your jam.
I'm driving Brent nuts. I'm driving everyone I know nuts. But I also feel like it is important that the president represent your views, even if they look like you. Like, I don't feel like just because we have a woman candidate, we need to be like, well, it's fine as long as we have a woman in there.
Right.
Like, that doesn't help us deal with financial regulation.
No. Are we going to vote for Carly Fiorina?
No, exactly.
We're going to talk about her in a second.
Elizabeth Warren is somebody who is both a woman and a person who represents our views. And that is why we like her.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, I don't feel like as a progressive, you need to be sorry for not supporting a non-progressive.
No.
It's like being sorry that you're not supporting a Tea Party or who cares.
Or a Republican. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's not like, the party that you belong
that's
to.
It's not the party you belong to. To deal with that. Joe Biden has been making some or is going to be is yeah. now currently making some visits to Iowa.
Making his Iowa debut.
That's right. He's just hanging. I bet people in Iowa like him.
My parents caucused for him.
Yeah, he seems so charming.
I mean, he wasn't a viable candidate, so they had to go caucus for other people. Right. But they started with Biden.
That's the fun of the caucus.
Right. That's it.
You can caucus for everyone.
Yeah, and then you might surprisingly have to go someplace else, and you might not know who it's going to be until you get there. Like my dad. He accidentally went to Bill Richardson after Joe Biden. He didn't know what he was doing.
No, he's just walking around.
Thought
the room.
He was going to go caucus for Biden, and then he. Exactly. I've got to pick one of these other bozos now.
No, so you're in the room. It's a lot of pressure. You got to go to a corner somewhere. Got to find a corner to go to.
Pick a team.
Exactly. So in any case, he is going to give a speech at Drake University and then doing a roundtable in Des Moines where he, I think, ostensibly, he's going to talk about the economic proposals that the administration laid out in the State of the Union. Then he's also going to talk about, I think, that free college thing because he's going to a community college.
Yeah.
Here's something that's a little concerning. Not that concerning because he's not really in the mix for the presidential race.
Not happening.
But he would be 72.
Yeah.
If he would, or he's 72 right now. He would be 74.
Right.
When elected, that's too old to be president.
I agree. I think that he doesn't obviously. I don't think have a much of a play. I think his only hope, and it's a pipe dream anyway, but is that this economy continues to do what it's doing for the next 2 years. I think at that point he has at least something
he can be like, I was to talk part of the about. Team that did this.
I am the person who will continue this movement in the right direction. Yeah. And I think there would be a certain amount of people who would listen to that argument.
Yeah.
I don't know that it would be enough amount of people.
He's the only contender so far with a charming smile.
Very true.
You know, a charming smile goes a long way.
Like classy pair of aviators.
That's right. He's a classy guy. He's not.
He really is.
Yeah.
Charmer.
He's a charmer. So, you know. Maybe he's that going for him.
Yeah.
But he currently trails both Hillary Clinton and Elizabeth Warren, American Hero.
Right.
So
I think
he's not
tied with Bernie Sanders.
He's tied with Bernie Sanders.
Actually, they're both at like 5 or 6 or
yeah. And he's also tied with Bernie Sanders in New Hampshire as well. So him and Bernie Sanders both running pipe dream campaigns.
Yeah.
Well, although I'm excited that Bernie Sanders is getting
just
as much of the vote as he's getting.
There, right. It's a little surprising.
Especially with Elizabeth Warren also in the mix.
Right.
Like, I feel like collectively they're getting kind of a surprisingly high percentage of the vote.
I agree.
Because people care.
That's right.
People like them.
One person who's not getting any percentage of the vote, and even if he decided to run, would continue to get no percentage of the vote, is John Kerry, who this week made it sound like maybe he wasn't totally not running.
A person who has already failed to get a percentage of the vote once.
Right. Now, I don't love John Kerry.
Don't love him either.
I would not vote for him this time. I didn't like having to vote for him the last time.
Didn't vote for him the last time.
I do feel a little bad for John Kerry in the sense that John Kerry did not lose in 2004 because it was our fault that he was the candidate in 2004.
Yeah. No,
and that's not to say he ended up ultimately being a fine candidate. He was a little boring.
He's boring. But
the problem was, is that any person in 2004 who had voted against the Iraq war would have been the president in 2004.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we were too dumb
to know
at the time. And we nominated John Kerry, who seemed like a reasonable person at the time. He was,
according to the old line of thinking.
He had the experience. He was the war hero. He was he had the credentials. I get it. But like, it's not happening for you, John Kerry.
No.
It's over.
You're not the president guy.
No.
You
it's
were
done.
A great senator. Well done, you.
Sure.
You've been a good Secretary of State.
That's it.
I'm glad you're there.
Congratulations.
But you're not the president guy.
No.
That's not you.
Yeah, he said on Meet the Press this week that he was like, what did he say, would never rule it out or something like that.
He said, well, nobody says never, but I mean, I have no concept.
Right, nobody says never is like a declaration of candidacy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You don't say you're running for president until the system's up and running, but you will say that you're not running for president.
Right,
up until
thing.
That point. That's the same thing as declaring your candidacy, but it's just an earlier phase. That's when you declare your candidacy, but you have no organization yet.
Right, exactly.
I like, actually, because we are going to talk about Jeb Bush right now.
Yeah.
I feel like John Kerry is like the Jeb Bush of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
They're kind of the same person in a lot of ways. They're like the same brand of generic.
Person. Yeah.
Same brand of sort of like generic aristocracy.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah.
I think Mitt Romney fits pretty comfortably in there, but he's a Mormon, so he's got like that weird Mormon thing. That's what makes him be like a little out of the box as a choice.
Yeah.
That's what gives him his exciting edge.
Sure.
But like John Kerry and Jeb Bush and there's just guys.
Giant nothings.
They're just aristocratic guys. They're the aristocracy of the American elite, which is still new money, but whatever.
Right. I bet John Kerry wouldn't turn his nose up at a car elevator.
No.
Or an Olympic dressage horse.
No. He probably has enjoyed
and Olympic Mitt Romney dressage have a lot of things to talk about.
A lot. Too many.
Too many.
But so in any case, Jeb Bush had some...
some good news, finally.
Had some good-ish news. This is not the greatest news.
No, he should be winning by more here.
This is
because there was a poll from New Hampshire this week, which is what you would think would be his sort of outside of Florida, his bread and butter.
The people that he's running against so far in New Hampshire are like a bunch of crazy people.
Yeah.
And like people that no one in New Hampshire is voting for.
Yeah.
So because it's like Rand Paul and Scott Walker. Like people in New Hampshire aren't trying to deal with Rand Paul and Scott Walker.
No.
Except that they're not trying to deal with them. Because they're basically pulling it almost the same as Bush.
They are. He's got 16%.
In the lead at 16%.
But Rand Paul and Scott Walker, 13 and 12, right behind him.
Yeah. So this isn't exactly like some sort of resounding victory for him. And also, there's a big but to his lead.
Yeah.
Because he has a 50% unfavorable rating with general election voters and only a 35% favorable rating.
Yeah.
Only Donald Trump had a higher unfavorable rating. And Donald Trump is the least likable person on the planet. So that's not a good sign. In contrast to this, Hillary Clinton has a 56% she's polling at 56% among Democratic voters.
Right.
Liz Warren is in second at 15%, which is...
basically the same poll that came out of Iowa a couple weeks
exactly.
ago.
Exactly. And is also the same that Jeb Bush is polling among conservatives.
Right.
She's polling in the second, like in the far second place at the same rate that he's polling as the far and away leader.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, I think, funny because the Republicans are desperate to not have like a crazy circus of a primary this year.
That's what they're having.
They're already having it. It's already happened.
Yeah.
It's too late.
Right.
You can try to cut down the number of debates all you want.
Right.
You're not going to get rid of the circus.
And what is so fascinating, at least to me, about this Republican primary is that I think while that Republican primary in 2012 was like wacko bonkers and every single person like held the lead at one point, I think on some level, everyone kind of knew that Romney was somehow going to come out of that pile as being the only reasonable person who could maybe win the presidency.
Yeah.
It took a while. It took longer than a lot of people thought. Some people hung around. I mean, good God, Herman Cain led in the polls for a while.
I know.
But I mean, there's no person who anyone has in their gut as like, this is who we're actually going to end up with. I think it could be one of five different people.
Yeah.
At least.
No. And then there's the hangers-on. Because there are a bunch of people that are kind of circling the 2016 drain that know that they're never going to be the candidate.
Right.
But also remember that last time, everyone got a chance to shine.
That's right.
And they're looking for their chance in the spotlight.
That's right. You might get a show on Fox News. You will, as we said in the rundown, you will get a book deal. You can go on tour. You can maybe, get a vacation out of it.
Your speaker's fees will increase.
Big time.
immensely, yeah.
Yeah.
So here are some people that are thinking about throwing their hats into the ring.
You might not have heard of some of these people.
Nope. Here's number one, George Pataki, the very tall ex-governor of New York.
Ah, sure.
Why not? He's into it mostly because his pet issue is a lifetime lobbying ban for members of Congress. Okay. I'm into that.
Sure, yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
His secret other plan is to just be a horrible conservative idiot.
Yeah, well, that's...
So, you know, there's that concern. I mean, he was not, as you might imagine, my favorite governor of New York in history. But he got three terms. He was governor for fucking ever.
Yeah.
And he's very tall, so there's that going for him.
People like tall people oftentimes.
But he was the governor in the 90s. So
too long
the
ago.
The early 2000s, no one remembers who he is. No. Only people in New York State remember who he is, and none of them care anymore about him.
Yeah.
Because he's not nearly as exciting as Giuliani, and they were of the same era.
That ship has... Long left the harbor.
Another person who, as Politico put it, last won an election when the flip phone was hot technology, Jim Gilmore, the former Virginia governor.
Yeah, don't know who that is.
No,
I do now, you just told me.
Right, but. He thinks that he is uniquely positioned because he, I think because he has like a degree in foreign policy and once was on a congressional advisory panel on terrorism and WMDs.
Doesn't do it.
I'm on a federal advisory panel myself at the moment.
Oh, that's right.
So
you are.
If that's all that it takes, maybe I should be president.
Throw your hat in the ring.
Yeah, just why not?
Yeah.
Be a Republican candidate for president.
That's right.
At this point, they're all so, like, crazy that I feel like if a progressive threw their hat into the ring there, it, like, wouldn't make that much of a ripple.
No, sure.
I mean, everyone's so nuts and they don't like each other anyway. Yeah. That why not be the progressive in the Republican primary?
Do it.
Why not?
Yeah.
There's Bob Ehrlich, who used to be the governor of Maryland.
Nope, got nothing there.
Nope. He left office in 2016 and then lost in 2010 when he ran again to be governor and didn't get to.
Yep.
But he's big into criminal justice reform. Basically, these are all people with pet issues, and they want to raise some awareness about their pet issue so they can then get a book deal about their pet issue and speak about their pet issue for lots and lots of
Rand Paul's got the criminal justice reform on lockdown already.
Yeah. No, Bob Ehrlich is not... That's not it. No. That's not the one that's going to get you there. John Bolton is talking about running for president. This is the guy who came up with the brilliant WMD strategy in Iraq for W.
I'm gonna say something here. Never held elected office and can't be elected. He has a mustache problem.
He does have a mustache problem.
He can't be elected with that mustache.
No, it's you a dumb mustache.
It's sort of like, you know, it's why Chris Christie had to get the lap band. You can't be that fat and be elected.
It's...
President.
We're a superficial nation.
You can't have eyebrow wigs.
No.
Ron Paul.
Right.
There are things that you can't have.
Right.
And be the president. And that John Bolton mustache.
That's
it. That's
one
of them. The list.
No, it's like a pederast mustache. It's
wacky.
It's a wacky, uncomfortable making mustache where you can't talk to him with a serious face because of his mustache.
No, it's not, but you can't have that.
And his whole plan is to press for a more hawkish foreign policy, and he's the guy who came up with the WMD plan in Iraq, which is the least popular plan in history.
I will say the only people who are looking for a more hawkish foreign policy are people who are voting in the Republican primaries. So
nobody's
got an in.
Nobody was voting in the general. But you know who else is looking for a more hawkish foreign policy and running? Peter King, a person who's actually in office right now, so at least has a vague claim to that.
No.
Peter King, he's a Long Island congressman, and he's an interesting choice. Because recently, his biggest headlines have been made hitting conservatives.
Right.
Remember?
Specifically over the shutdown, right?
Yeah, he was the only logic thinker during the shutdown. He was the only Republican who was like, guys, this is ridiculous. Like, and he was the guy who was going to vote to end the shutdown. He was one of the Republicans that they had recruited to vote to end the shutdown. He's mysteriously talking about maybe running for president because he wants a more hawkish foreign policy
as
the representative of Long Island.
He is an interesting one because I think that because of his views that were maybe not necessarily shared by the Republican base, but I think that he could be a potential thorn in the side of Ted Cruz.
Yes, absolutely.
Because of his sort of like eloquence on the shutdown.
Well, and because that's really like the only thing that he's been known for recently.
Right.
You know, he crops up periodically because we talk about him when we talk about New York stuff.
Sure.
But nationally, that's really the only thing I can think of that he has really like made any bones with. And so that's sort of interesting.
Yeah.
Aside from asshole-ish things on foreign policy, which obviously he cares about a lot.
Yeah.
Then there's Carly Fiorina.
I mean,
the former CEO of Hewlett-Packard who just won't fucking go away.
She won't.
She's failed to be the senator from California.
Hard. Failed hard.
Real hard. She's comically inept at running for anything.
Yeah.
And so now she thinks she should be president. Because why not?
She had a couple good zingers at that Steve King summit.
That's true.
So maybe she can zing her way to maybe she can
vague
have a
relevancy.
You know, she can have some sort of 1 week lead in the polls, potentially, if she really... Yeah,
she could Herman Cain her way through that hard.
She could rehash the 999 plan. And yeah. Maybe just really...
Well, she's basically the same kind of candidate.
Totally.
She's like a former CEO with CEO no real relevant experience who's just going to come up with crackpot ideas that she's just going to have quippy comebacks and zingers.
Yeah, that's right.
Probably doesn't know the name of Uzbekistan either.
No. No, she definitely not.
So, you know, no. She's the same. She can be the Herman Cain of this round.
Yeah, maybe she should be.
But basically, I mean, all of these people are talking about running because you get so much exposure. And that is why there is a circus-like atmosphere, is because people buy into this dumb nonsense.
Fine.
And that's fine with me.
I'm into it. All of them. No, do it.
This is great news for anyone who doesn't vote Republican but cares about politics.
Yeah.
Because this is the kind of news that will allow you to write a really hilarious wrap-up of the 2016 races in 2017.
That's right. It will
allow you to make references for years to come about hilarious quips that they failed to say correctly.
See how many we just busted out from 2012?
We just busted out like a million quips from 2012. And that
right
wasn't
off the top
all of
our head.
No.
That wasn't all
we
of them.
We didn't even talk about Newt Gingrich.
But we remember them because they're great.
Because they were great. That was a classic. If we have to talk about classic elections, I feel like that was a classic.
Was it?
I mean...
was what you're looking for.
That's everything that you could ever want. I can't think of another election time that... that had that many classic moments.
It was perfection.
It was perfection in every way. And it looks like we might be gearing up for
getting
another. We don't have... Oh, well, we have Sarah Palin. I was going to say, we don't have Michelle Bachmann anymore.
No, we don't have quite the... We need that one sort of quintessential loon running
here. Rick Santorum will come back.
He's
not busy.
He's doing it.
He's doing it. Yeah.
He's apparently being really boring now. Remember how we talked about him being boring? Like, if he's going to talk about economic populism, like... nobody cares, Rick.
No, not into that.
Not why you're along for the ride.
You are not going to get elected on an economic populist platform.
Somebody might, but it's not going to
be
you.
It might be Liz Warren, but it's not going to be you.
No.
And then, speaking of people that are running for president for the GOP, our favorite pediatric neurosurgeon, Ben Carson, did some bizarre sense talking this week. First time ever. Well, this is a guy who, by the way, it's hard to remember what Ben Carson has said because he's so generic and random.
Yeah.
Like, he is random. Who the fuck is he?
Right.
He's a random pediatric neurosurgeon who's a Tea Partier who is mysteriously a huge celebrity in Tea Party circles.
Well, he became a Tea Party celebrity because of the prayer breakfast. Remember?
He did that.
Right?
Yeah.
It's all coming full circle.
It's all coming full circle, everybody. God, we didn't even plan that, guys.
Oh, yes, we did.
We planned that. We planned that very carefully.
We've been planning it for weeks.
We were waiting for this news to come up so that we could tell you about this.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a guy who has said a lot of terrible things about everyone.
He said
in 2013, he said women should be re-educated to not get so riled up about their access to abortion.
Oh, God.
He's very against marriage equality. He compared same-sex relationships to pedophilia and bestiality.
Ah, yes. Classic.
He also famously said that Obamacare, if implemented, would be, quote, the worst thing that's happened to this nation since slavery.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes. Well, and he also, as a...
editorial note, he's African-American.
Right. As a neurosurgeon, he also, we spoke recently, said that he would undo Obamacare even if it worked.
Right.
Which it is, it's working, so that would be
his only option at this point.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean,
we talked about that last week.
Yeah, this is a man who is a healthcare professional who is not interested in people having healthcare.
No, not
so the
not
fact that he
it.
Was the fact that he was doing some sense talking on vaccines is questionable.
Right. Because vaccines is a medical topic.
That's
and
right.
He is ostensibly an expert, but as we've proven time and again,
he's not.
He doesn't care much about his
expertise.
No,
you would want him to be.
But so Chris Christie and I think Rand Paul, both are taking heat because they kind of came out in support of these crazy anti-vaxxer people that spreading measles to everyone.
This has been such an interesting story to
this
me
is
because
such a
it's
weird.
It's a weird story, and we've talked
weird
about it before.
Bedfellows.
But like that's what is so fascinating to me because I always love any story where you end up with things like this because it's like you just endlessly ask yourself how we got here, sort of.
Yeah.
Because like I mean, you are now basically the teams who have formed are the far, far, far
like
freedom
granola
loving
left.
Yes, granola left, and the far, far like freedom loving like. Fringe right who think that you should not be able to vaccinate your children and then the nutbags who think you should be able to vaccinate your children by giving them some sort of
fruit nut bar and
yeah exactly
just call it a day
doesn't work
no.
like that
well this is how you know that the political spectrum runs as a circle
because
there is a left that's so far that you end up back on the right
exactly
and that's where these people have met
you've come up on the behind of the right
Yeah.
Scared them into agreeing with you on something. Right. And then now nobody knows what to do.
No.
But Ben Carson, thank God.
Apparently knows what to do.
Right.
And that's to vaccinate your fucking children.
Dear God in heaven.
If it takes Ben Carson to know this, if Ben Carson is a person who can know this, and he's a person who doesn't know much.
That's right.
Then, I mean, I don't understand why this is even a discussion.
I don't either.
Facts that even we can agree with Ben Carson on are facts that everyone should agree universally on.
That's right. If we can agree with Ben Carson, then all humans can agree.
Yeah, exactly. There's no debate anymore.
None.
We science believers and him, a fake pediatric neurosurgeon who I practiced medicine, but I would be nervous to know on who, agree on how you should trust that vaccines aren't going to give your children autism and are just things that you should do for the good of society. He basically said that this is not really about you. This is about the safety of everyone.
Right.
This is a public health issue.
Yeah.
Him, a person who doesn't believe in public health, said that. So,
Oh, God. It's so interesting to me. The whole measles thing, it's just like.
It's fascinating.
It's fascinating. I heard an interesting theory on this that I sort of feel like might make a little bit of sense. Because I have sort of questioned, again, how we got here with this. I mean, it's so bizarre.
Bizarre.
And they were talking about this on Meet the Press, and it was Andrea Mitchell, I think, who actually said this, who brought up a good point. I think that one of the reasons that we have ended up here is because vaccines do work so well. We are sort of now in a generation who hasn't had to worry about any of these diseases. You know, as she said, she was like, you know, my father had polio. So when we could vaccinate against anything, we're going to do it because we remembered people dying of measles and dying of polio and having all of these terrible things. And now we've been vaccinating basically for an entire generation and a half that nobody has had these things. So now we think that, as you said, you could give somebody a fruit nut bar and they'll be fine.
Well,
and
I also
that's
think
just not
the other thing
the
is that the only illness that any of us can remember that we now have a vaccine for, but that was at one point a thing that we all got, is the chickenpox. And when you're a little kid, it's not that serious when you get the chickenpox. I had the chickenpox. I haven't had the vaccine because I've already had the chickenpox. Like, that is a thing that happens when you're our age and you are a person who had the chickenpox. But there are a lot of these diseases were much more serious than the chickenpox. And the chickenpox is very serious. If you get it as an adult, like if you have not had it as a kid, you should get the vaccine because it is very serious if you get it as an adult. It is life-threatening. But a lot of these diseases are diseases that I think we're thinking, like, whatever, the measles, it'll be like the chickenpox, it'll be fine. And, like, the measles is worse than the chickenpox.
Yeah.
A lot, like, polio is going to be worse than the chickenpox. These are all diseases that you should think of as the chickenpox times a lot.
Right.
Like, because I think that part of it is that we're all just thinking it must be, like, a casual thing like the chickenpox, where we used to all, like, go to the kid's house who had the chickenpox so we'd all get it while we were young so that we wouldn't die of the chickenpox in our 20s. And that's not what we're talking about here. The measles is much scarier than that.
Yeah.
And like, also, now that we can get rid of even the chickenpox, like, shouldn't we do that?
Yeah, let's do that.
Like, I could have gotten the chickenpox vaccine, but I am scared of needles and don't like unnecessary shots, so I did not, because I've already had the chickenpox.
Yes,
but
you don't need that.
Yeah, but if I were a person who hadn't had the chickenpox, I would have immediately gone and gotten the vaccine, because I'm not trying to get the chickenpox again.
Right.
Like, anyway.
Yeah.
Other news that has to do with Republicans being terrible.
Ugh. And also, Kansans being terrible. You know what? I'm going with it. I don't care. I'm sure there's some lovely people in Kansas, but you know what?
They've been doing the wrong.
And now they get to lie in it. So you know what? If you reelect Sam Brownback, who proved that he didn't know math at all and that he ran your state's budget,
destroyed your budget and got your credit downgraded,
got your credit downgraded, and you're in a giant deficit because he's gotten rid of all of the
corporate taxes. Because he had to cut taxes by 29%.
Yeah.
By 29%.
It should come. I know. It should come as no shock to you as Kansans that you are now not going to have any roads, basically.
And your pride of America roads that you were so proud of, we're not going to survive these cuts.
Nope.
Like, for some reason, everyone just thought they were going to go on having the same wonderful services they've always had.
No, because Brownback released his budget this week, and guess what?
It's not kind to roads.
Nothing that anybody wants is in the budget because they don't have any damn money to pay for it.
No, exactly. Finally, someone who understood math got in there and was like, we can't have anything anymore because we don't have any money.
Yeah.
Because after they had all those tax cuts, they even after that had less revenue come in than they expected.
Yeah.
And that's after they cut everything. They got less money than they expected after cutting everything already.
Yeah.
That's mind-boggling.
It was already bad.
It's a dark time for Kansas. So in any case, and then they went and reelected this guy. And now, so basically, his kind of like heartland of Kansas is these rural communities where they rely quite heavily on roads. Because
right,
that's
and bridges.
And bridges and things, because that's really the only infrastructure that they have, because there's only like 7 of them, and they live really far from each other.
Yeah, so guess what? They're pissed.
They're pissed. Suddenly, everyone's pissed.
Right, Republicans are pissed.
Because, also, well, Brownback had campaigned on the promise that they would maintain these great roads, because people in Kansas are, for some reason, very proud of their roads. They have, I guess, a wonderful highway system.
Yep.
They're,
it's very flat, so it's easy to build a road in Kansas.
Right. So true. They probably don't have the kinds of weather incidences that cause, like, huge cracks to appear. Like, here we sometimes get, like, weird craters in the road from earthquakes. They don't have that problem in Kansas.
No.
But they are now going to divest, like, $158 million from their roads project. So because of that, they're going to have to postpone smaller projects. They're going to have to basically extend larger projects to go on forever, because they're not going to have enough manpower to do them.
Yeah. They also on a related budget note, they are proposing cutting spending on public schools, state universities by $45 million. So education supporters were like super pissed, because like that's, you know, they are also proud of their schools.
Right. And those costs are definitely going to go up.
Yep.
I mean, they're going to have to.
Yep.
But even his Republican allies were sort of like,
guys,
this is too much, guys.
Yeah.
We didn't sign up to get rid of the roads.
No.
That's not what we're here for.
No.
And their Democratic leader in their state Senate said that Brownback is in a state of denial.
Well, he would have to be.
I don't know if it's like denial actual, as like, much as like brain freeze.
Right. Something that's like diagnosable.
Yeah. It's something a crazy person has.
There's like a serious mental disorder.
Yeah. No, it's not. He's not having thoughts like a normal person has thoughts.
No.
And that is a man that they reelected knowing that he wasn't having thoughts.
Recently.
So, sorry, Kansas.
Yep.
But, like, fix your
you're stuck.
Fucking shit. Come on.
Come on.
Do better.
Yeah.
Also, on a related note of people not learning lessons.
Oh, God.
The GOP cannot shut up about rape babies.
They just can't do it.
They can't stop themselves. Words come out of their mouths.
They have tried.
They cannot say non-insensitive things about rape.
It's really just as if
It's crazy.
They can't. It's like a... It's a sickness. It's another diagnosable thing that they have, I think. Because you would think that you could just have the thought and you could think to yourself,
be like, you know what?
Wait a minute.
This
is not the right out loud thought.
Right. Let me come up with something vague to say out loud,
right,
and I will think this thought in my head.
That's right.
That's as a politician, what you're asked to do repeatedly throughout the day.
Yeah.
You know? Some old lady comes up to you asking you for something annoying for her community, and your inside the head thought is like, who the fuck is this old lady? And your outside the head thought is, it's so lovely to meet you.
Yeah.
Of course I care about the issue that, you know, the park that doesn't have a dog run in your community. Like, whatever it is, that's your job as a politician.
Right.
So when you are at a hearing on a proposed abortion restriction,
mm-hmm,
do not say that women should not be allowed to abort pregnancies resulting from rape because the child that result could be, quote, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Don't say anything about rape.
Especially
period.
Especially if the guy who raped you was hot.
Like, do not answer a question or entertain a thought about rape as a Republican male in the vicinity of people.
Nope.
That's
don't do it.
A lesson you should have learned already.
Yeah.
Years ago.
Well, I mean, you should
just know.
You should know. Right?
But that's not something we can count on Republican men to know.
But if you just didn't know, then by now you should know.
Yeah. Here's his quote. For somebody to take advantage of somebody else in such a horrible and terrifying and brutal way is absolutely disgusting. But what is beautiful is the child that could come out of the production of this.
Ah, sure.
Come as the production of this, by the way. That's the actual quote.
Yeah.
So he's also a person who unnecessarily adds extra syllables to his words.
Yeah.
Hate those people. It's like people that say utilize instead of use all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
But in any case, this is, by the way, Virginia is voting on a horrible abortion bill, as is every state, about, you know, banning abortions after 20 weeks, even in the case of rape and, you know, that all sorts of horrible things that every state is voting on, it seems like.
Yeah.
And the bill is now headed for an up and down vote in the House, so it'll probably pass and
Wonderful.
We'll have to deal with that. And then it'll go to court and then, you know, it's like another 20-year process dealing with this.
Yeah.
So exhausted from these
things. God.
But in any case, this is a man who's never heard of Murdoch or Aiken or any of the
not.
Famous rape sayers of yore.
Yikes.
And now we finally get to talk about Aaron Schock.
Ah, yes, finally.
I've been waiting for this all week.
My congressional boyfriend,
Aaron Schock.
I mean, he's handsome.
Biggest Tea Party fundraiser, like, in history.
He's
hot. A good-looking guy.
He's a good-looking guy.
He's really hot.
He's on the cover of, like, Men's Health shirtless.
Mm-hmm.
This is a man who has spent time in the gym. Yeah, and has a nice face.
Not a lot of time in the books.
Nope.
A lot of time in the gym.
Yeah, that's right.
In any case, A hilarious thing happened. He's having a bad week.
He had the worst week
ever,
this week.
Possibly. Yeah. Yeah. So a Washington Post reporter went to go to his office and noticed that there were like deep red walls and like weird like pheasant feathers decorating things and stuff like that.
What is going on
here? I'm sort of like, this is interesting. What's going on here? So an aide says that the office has been done to resemble the Red Room in Downton Abbey. And then the designer, another aide, I guess, was there and was like really excited to show him around and like tell him about
it. Yeah.
So in any case.
Which apparently is not what you're supposed to do.
Not what you're supposed to do.
No.
Because his communications director, his spokesperson, flipped the fuck out. And no one's really sure why he flipped out to the degree that he did.
Yeah.
But he basically started threatening this reporter to get him to not to not post a story
like,
about
made a
this.
Made a bunch of promises to him, like, that he would get, like, exclusive access to, to Aaron like, Schock, and, like...
By the way, like,
nobody cares about exclusive access to Aaron Schock.
But also, that's, like, not something you can trade in as the spokesperson.
No.
Like, don't publish this story about our office decor, and if you don't, we'll give you exclusive access to our candidate.
Nope.
Like, go fuck yourselves.
Yeah.
In any case, no one, as I said, no one is sure why this guy, Benjamin Cole, who's the spokesperson and an aide to Schock, panicked to the degree that he did.
Yeah.
But he, like, flipped out. And so he goes back on one of his promises to Terrace, the reporter. And so the guy publishes the story. He's like, fuck you guys.
The pictures of this, it's just much too much.
It's much too much. But not only was it much too much, but it suddenly prompted ethics watchdogs to be like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What kind of nonsense is this?
Yeah.
So suddenly there's ethics investigations.
Right, because
this.
Like supposedly because, this aide who like designed it like did it for free or something.
Right. Well, and it was through this firm called Eurotrash that funded the whole thing. So that's already hilarious.
Yeah.
And so they donated the makeover, and then the designer, you know, also donated her time for free.
Yeah.
And so by Wednesday, he was forced to say that he would pay his designer for her work. Then he went on ABC News and said, I've never been a crusty old white guy. I'm different. And then quoted Taylor Swift and saying, haters gonna hate.
So good. But he also, it's really funny too, because like he has like said that he like doesn't watch Downton Abbey. I don't know why he was talking about that. But
no.
He's also voted to away funding PBS. From PBS.
I know.
So like,
so that's
this tour, this story had so many parts to it.
And it goes on. Because then on Thursday, a bunch of news outlets found that Benjamin Cole, this advisor slash spokesperson of his, had a bunch of Facebook posts where he compares black people to escaped zoo animals, engaging in, quote, mating rituals, and then has jokes about Obama being a secret Muslim. So Benjamin Cole, by Thursday afternoon, has resigned. Then on Friday, Schock is hit with accusations that he sold his home in 2012 to political donors for more than its market value. So basically, like, an undisclosed political donation was made. So, in any case, that story was the story that kept on giving. Every time that we learn something new about him, it's hilarious. But here's the final piece of the puzzle. What I learned today from a Politico expose.
I hadn't even heard this.
Schock and slash taxpayers and political donors pay a man named Jonathan Link, Jonathan with an O, to be Schock's full-time personal photographer and travel with him.
No. Nope.
This is a man who knows he's good looking, I guess.
That's right.
The guy used to be a Dallas area wedding photographer, and his site is still up. So if you want to hire him for your wedding, I think he's still available. Although he is currently working full time for Schock.
Oh, God.
This is Wonkette went had just like had a field day
so
suggesting
good.
That perhaps this man that's paid to travel with this guy is something more than just a full time photographer friend. But in any case, his office was asked about this expenditure because it sounds excessive. And they said what is spent on photographers is in line with what is raised as a result. Because this guy is just like a monster fundraiser. Because he's so good looking.
Yeah.
He's like a model. He's not like a real person.
He is.
I mean, he's a literal model. He's not a real person with thinking thoughts or anything. But,
but
people love donating money to a model. People love models.
That's right.
But so in any case, there has been there have been a lot of investigations into his finances. There are, you know, he's taken trips with this photographer. They've, you know.
Well, gay rumors have followed him for ages.
Oh, yeah. Not surprisingly.
Right.
Nobody in that kind of shape is straight. That doesn't happen to people.
Also, there's a great picture, too. I don't know if one Jonathan Link took it or not, but I saw recently because when you Google him, it's one of the first images that come up of him with outside and he's in a pair of like white linen pants with like a hot pink belt and like a teal linen like button-up shirt basically like from some event that he's at. I mean, he's a well-dressed
well-groomed and well-dressed guy,
right?
Do the
math.
Has spent tens of thousands of dollars on vacations to Vegas, on New York, Vail, Aspen, and a personal photographer that travels with him everywhere.
Yes.
So, in final news, if that wasn't good enough.
This one's all you. I'm giving you this one.
They've been doing this weird study of the subway where they're trying to do like a they're like tracking the subway germs on it, like doing a germ map of the subways, basically. Not information you want, P.S. Nope. And not surprisingly, in their study, they found traces of Black Death and, or I mean, of bubonic plague and anthrax germs.
Oh, God.
At a bunch of different stations that were not near each other. Oh. So those are just traveling all around.
They're traveling. Yeah. Everywhere. Yeah.
So obviously, and everyone was sort of like, well, bubonic plague, there's a lot of rats in the subway. That makes sense, right? But also, bubonic plague is a naturally occurring thing in the Southwest. Like in New Mexico and Arizona, it occurs naturally from the environment. You can just get bubonic plague there. You don't have to have talked to a rat or anything. But so, in any case, it's treatable by antibiotics these days. It's not actually that serious. But we do get a few naturally occurring cases every year. Not in New York, usually. Yeah. Apparently, there were some people that had the bubonic plague, I think in 2002, that traveled to New York. And so, you know, there are germs just floating around. Anthrax. People are always talking about anthrax germs being everywhere. Convinced. I remember after 9/11, I was walking down the street with a friend, and we're walking by like the smoldering, you know, piles of debris at the World Trade Center site on our way home from school. And I turned to her and I was like, I never thought I'd be so unscared about anthrax, because it was right after those anthrax threats broke, and I was like, well, anthrax in the subway, I couldn't give a shit about that. Right. Did not care. So I'm not surprised to find there's anthrax there, and I don't care.
Yeah.
But in any case, so New York Magazine, went and talked to a scientist about this, because these were alarming findings and everyone was panicking because there's bubonic plague in the subway. And the scientists were like, nah, you could probably lick a subway pole and nothing would happen.
Don't do that, people.
So if you would like to test this out, you have scientists' approval to lick a subway pole. You probably won't get bubonic plague, but you might.
Test it out. Let us know how it goes.
Let us know how that goes. We're available on Twitter 24/7 for those kinds of facts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in any case, that's the news this week.
That was the news.
We'll probably have almost no news to report on Sunday. We're going to have like 3 days worth of non-news to report to you. Yeah, but it's going to be great.
Yeah.
I feel like we could talk about anything then.
Yeah, we do it.
We have all
the
time in the world.
That's right.
So until then, have a good week. We'll talk to you much sooner than a week from now.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye.